Are we there yet? Are we there yet? Are we there yet? Sitting in the front seat of a car, what parent hasn't heard that over and over and over again? Are we there yet? When are we going to be there? Are we there yet? You may be asking the same question about this morning. Are we there yet? And I want to say something about this question, not only on trips, although I'll start off with trips. Growing up in Philadelphia, the trip we took was down to the shore. That's what you do in Philadelphia. You go down to the Jersey Shore. Just like in New York, you go off to the Hamptons, or in California, you go to Big Bear or Hawaii, or in the Midwest, you get abducted by aliens. It's just what you do if you want to get away. So we went to the shore. And sometimes you focus more on being there than you do on the getting there. And I was, I guess, about 11 or 12 years old when we were getting ready to go down to the shore, and my mother said to me, "The food is in these bags, please go put it in the trunk." And I went and carried out her wishes. We drove down to the shore, and she opened up the trunk, and it was empty. And she said to me, "Did you put the food in the trunk?" And I said, "Yes." And then she asked a question that I've remembered all these years later. She said, "In this car?" Now, I attribute the fact that I put the food in the trunk, but in the other car, and never noticed we were driving a different car down to New Jersey, not to the fact that I am what our ancestors used to call a Luftmensch, that is, that I don't notice stuff in front of me, but because I was so fixed on being at the shore and didn't think about getting to the shore. And I bring this up because Passover in particular is the holiday of getting and not arriving. One of the remarkable things about the Torah is we never get there. You start off in Genesis, and then with the Exodus, it's all about entering the land of Israel. And we're told what's going to happen when we enter the land and how wonderful the land's going to be, and we're liberated from Egypt so we can get to the land, and then you finish the book of Deuteronomy, and we're still in the desert. It's a book without an arrival. And it's true that we get there in the book of Joshua, but Joshua isn't included in the Torah. Is not really the wonderful climax that we expect from this journey. And you get the sense that the Torah is all about the journey and not about the arrival. In fact, there's a beautiful comment from Rashi, the medieval commentator, at the very end of the book of Deuteronomy, when it says that God was with Israel in all their journeys. Rashi says, but what about when they camped? After all, they weren't walking all day, every day, and all night, every night. And his answer is that even the encampments are called journeys. In other words, even when you are solitary, even when you are still in space, you still, if your spirit is alive, are on a journey. And we have a natural tendency, human beings, to look only at the goal and not at the journey. If we only get to this place, everything will be fine. We do this to ourselves in life. When we're in elementary school, we just want to be in middle school. When we're in middle school, we know everything will be fine once we make it to high school. And in high school, everybody's fixed on getting to college. The best college. And once you're in college, you know your job is going to be what really makes your life. And then it's going to be your marriage, and then it's going to be your children, and then it's going to be your promotion, and then it'll be your grandchildren, and all of a sudden life is over. And you lived the way Gershom Scholem, the great Jewish scholar, said that for too many years the Jews lived waiting for the Messiah. He said they were always fixed on the Messiah's coming, so they lived life in deferment, always deferring what life would be till the Messiah came. And we, who are less fixed on the Messiah, but are more fixed on immediate, tangible goals, we do the same thing. Are we there yet is another way of saying things won't start till we get there. That's when things will be good. That's when things will be real. That's when things will start. And all this intermediate time, it's just filler. It doesn't really count. It's only when we hit the goal, when we get there, that everything will be fine. But of course, deferment is dangerous. It's dangerous. Because this is as real as life gets. It doesn't get more real tomorrow, or the day after, or when something happens that you're waiting to happen. This is it. As the French writer Gide said, life is fired at us point blank. This is as real as it gets. And every moment of it has something. One of the maladies of our society is our fear of boredom. Not only are we afraid of boredom, but we can't stand for our kids to be bored, as though saying I'm bored requires an instant remedy. Well, if you're bored, why don't you? And then we run through all the panoply of technological solutions. Turn on your iPod, turn on the computer, watch TV, listen to the radio, get on the internet. But the second side of boredom is self-discovery. And if we live in distraction, then we live in deferment. We're not living real. We're not paying attention to the journey. We're only paying attention to the arrival. And if you don't believe me, here is a beautiful letter, which I'm going to read a small extract from the Spanish philosopher Miguel de Unamuno. He's responding to a letter from a young writer. And the essay, which began as a letter, is called To a Young Writer. And he says, my young friend, we cannot understand one another. You speak one language and I another. And we both refuse to translate our terms. Just to hear the words you use leaves me still unclear as to your meaning. One of them is the way you use the word arrive. Its meaning has become less and less clear to me. Please explain these phrases from your letter. So-and-so has arrived. John Doe will never arrive. Today is very difficult for a young man to arrive, and other expressions of that sort. What is this business about arriving? Arrive where? There's but one certain arrival, and that is death. And that might be better termed a departure. And besides, says Unamuno, woe to you on the day when you do arrive, then the return begins. What he's saying to him is, and this from somebody who was famous and celebrated, that arrival isn't what you think it is. That if you ask most people the happiest times of their lives, it's the journey, not the instant that you get the gold watch that signals the retirement at which you have told yourself, as soon as I can do that, as soon as I can retire, as soon as the journey's over, then I'll really enjoy myself. As if, as Thoreau said, you could kill time without injuring eternity. As if you could live your life always waiting for the next day and not destroy the day you have. Most of the Torah is actually not about Israel, but about the journey. Most of it is about getting there, about the wilderness, because that's where we live. And the quality of your life will be measured not in where you get to at the end, but in the steps you took along the way. So you heard, for example, Ruth Messenger speak this morning. I know a lot of people who, when I ask them for charitable contributions, will say to me, I will give, but not yet. I don't yet have enough. I'm not yet surfeited with abundance. I have to have more, and then I'll give. As though everybody here wasn't blessed with more. People who say, I really want to do this, see this place, spend more time with those I love, read this book, do something valuable, but not yet. Not yet, in time. The time will come. Hillel anticipated this 2,000 years ago. He said, don't say of the Torah, I'll study it when I get time. For you may never have time. The journey is what we get. We don't get the arrival. And all of life is about being alive to the wonders, the beauties, the mystery, the love, and the responsibility of being on the journey. It is, in the words of William James, all of life about creating something that will outlast it. It's about self-transcendence, not about distractions, not about pulling yourself away from yourself, not about being there yet, but about getting there now. I bring this up because that is not only the Pesach story, but it's also the story of the man around whom the Pesach story is based. One of the peculiar things about the Torah is it doesn't really tell us why God chooses whom God chooses. All of a sudden, God comes out of the sky and says, Abraham, you. And we don't know why. The rabbis fill in all sorts of stories about Abraham breaking his father's idols and so on, but the Torah doesn't say that. Just one day, God decides, I want this guy. And of course, for the principal mission, that is the mission of Moses, we also don't really know why Moses is chosen, but we have one beautiful hint. You remember when God first appears to Moses is at the burning bush. But God doesn't just appear at the burning bush. What happens is that Moses is pastoring the flock of his father-in-law Jethro. And then it says, and there was a bush, and the bush was on fire, but it didn't turn to ashes. It wasn't consumed. And Moses noticed and said, Asur na ve'ereh, I'm going to turn aside and look at this bush. And then the Torah says, when God saw that Moses turned aside, God called out to him, Moses, Moses. So the rabbis say that bush had been burning since the beginning of time. But thousands, millions of people walked by it, and what's the big deal? A brush fire in the desert, they didn't notice. But Moses was alive. Moses paid attention. Moses cared about the journey. And that's why, even though Moses famously never arrives in the land of Israel, he's the most important personality in our tradition, because Moses' life is entirely about the journey. And if, in fact, his life was judged by whether he got there, he would have been a failure. But he wasn't. Because the same Moses who noticed the bush noticed the Israelites. You know, there is a beautiful phrase at the very end of the Torah when Moses says goodbye to the Israelites. There's a Hebrew phrase, lo yachol latzeit v'lavo, he can't go out and he can't come in. And that's a Hebrew idiom for he no longer has vigor. In other words, he's dying. But the rabbis saw it differently. They said, what did it mean that Moses could no longer go out and go in? It means at the very end of his life, he went in and out of the tent of every Israelite to say goodbye. He went in, he said, I'm leaving you now, went in the next tent and the next tent. And when he had gone in the tent of every Israelite and no longer had to go in because he had seen everyone, then he went up to Har Nebo, crossed his hands over his chest and said goodbye to the world. In other words, for Moses, there was no destination. There was a journey, not of distraction, not of pulling himself away from others and away from God, but of awareness, of decency, of goodness, and of love. On this Pesach, I hope that we will remind ourselves that everything we need to lead a good life is here with us now, that we need not live in deferment. We don't have to wait till next month, till next year. L'shana haba'ah b'Yerushalayim, next year in Jerusalem, doesn't mean that this year doesn't count. It does. It counts for us, and it counts for the message that we send to our children, which is, Every day is real. Every day matters. And life is not where you end up. Life is all about the journey. On this Pesach, let us remember that the essential act is Yitziat Mitzrayim, is the beginning of the journey, is the freedom of self-creation, is the chance to cross the wilderness together, hand in hand, looking towards the land, knowing where we're going, whether we arrive or not. Because if we journey together, then we will bless one another and be blessed by God. Shabbat Shalom.